It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 11th day of September, 2023, 22 years since the day that changed America. I heard a guy talking about it earlier today, and he said, you know, we had a chance to grow as a nation after that and become a better country, but, well, we decided to take a different road. I think that's so true, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. Like I said, it's the 11th of September, 2023. This program is live. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round, and, well, whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for listening live. Thank you for being part of this remarkable little community that has, well, held up and held space and informed and shared triumph and tragedy all together for nearly 20 years. Thank you. If you are listening live, of course, you can be part of the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany by heading over to HeadOn.live and being greeted by the early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky and Anatole, and very, very poorly and lightly moderated by Mwah, who will be busy actually, you know, doing the show. Yeah, it's a fun time. It really is. And if you're listening to the podcast, wherever you take it, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, etc. Leave a comment, please, and so that people, the algorithms will see that there are people listening to the program, and they might even make might make other people want to join in and be part of the community. And God, that'd be great, because I love hearing from. I love hearing from new voices and sharing those new voices along the way, if they're email or, you know, sharing them via phone calls, that sort of thing. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our 11th, 10th, and 9th day of the month subscribers via PayPal and the U.S. mail, for that matter. So thank you to Cecilia. And thank you to Tony and Chico. Thank you to Christopher in Oregon. Thank you to John in Maryland. Hey, John, thank you. Thank you to Joe Vecchio, our buddy. I presume still up Chicago way. And thank you to David in Oregon. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep this little effort on the air. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you to Mary Bell. Thank you to James. Thank you so very much. So it's Morim Nande. It's also the anniversary of the terrorist attacks of September the 11th, 2001. There were, of course, memorial ceremonies today. Bells were rung, names were read. But because it's a significant moment in the commemoration of a signal event in American history, and because it's Morin Monday, well, we have Morins. Because of course we do. It's sort of like, you know, you can count on, and I guess it all started, didn't it, if you think about it, with Bill Falafel Man O'Reilly and his diatribes oh so long ago, before he cost Fox News TV Radio Rwanda millions and millions and millions of dollars and lost Roger Ailes his job and cost Roger Ailes money. And you know, back when Bill was getting liquored up and calling female staffers and saying, "Oh, what I'd do, baby, if I was with you right now, we'd get in a shower, pour you a glass of wine, I'd pour you a glass of wine in the shower, and you could drink the wine, and I would rub your back with falafel." 'Cause he did that. 'Cause he has good Christian values and he's a conservative Republican. Fuck it. We'll do it live. But I don't know that that was the beginning of right-wingers having hissies about holidays or historical commemorations in this case. But for instance, every January when the Dr. King holiday comes around, a few days before, I'll begin to feel these sort of, I don't know, psychic waves of cringing that begin, because I know in just a few short days, maggots and other Republicans and conservatives will start saying really gross, cringy, revolting things about Dr. King. So you got Christmas, you got that. Anything is susceptible, 4th of July. And today, this Morin Monday, was no different. No. What do I mean? Well, let's do this right, shall we? I mean, it is, after all, Morin Monday. Yes.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Right up, right here. The Morin Monday tent is open for your viewing and listening and cringing pleasure. Yes, yes indeed, right here, just mere steps off the Carnival Midway. We have them all. Every variety. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas reside the greatest horrors, the greatest cringes, the greatest guffaws, the greatest gross-outs that the right wing has to offer. We've got birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger-eaters, maggots, trumpanzees, libertarians, Christians, the whole gamut of right-wing weirdness, racists and phobes of every variety. They're all here. Yes, yes, yes. Come right in. Come right in. It's quite easy. Just moments ago, you were hopefully flinging ping pong balls, goldfish balls, in a vain and fruitless, usually, attempt to take home a precious, not really, baby iguana. Yes. So wander on over here. And you know, the Moran Monday tent comes around each and every Monday, hence the name. And for those who want to help as we pass the hat, it's just a matter of something less than half of the value of a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum per broadcast. Yes, yes. Not even a half a McDonald's hamburger. No cheese. For those of you who throw a $10 bill in the hat for the month, it's just that easy. But be forewarned, for behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, residing as they do therein, all of these freaking weirdos, fascists, Nazis, white supremacists, Christian nationalists. Oh, yeah. You want to keep a close eye on anybody that you bring in with you, you know, children or small animals, even that baby iguana you somehow miraculously won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. Watches, jewelry, bracelets, rings, necklaces. Don't be feeling too froggy about those piercings either, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And really, really, today is no different. No. I knew this morning when I woke up and knew what the date was, and yeah. Well, it wouldn't take long. Today, on the 22nd anniversary of the terrorist attacks on the city of New York, Washington, D.C., and a field outside of Shanksville, Pennsylvania, a maggot by the name of Ralph Norman. Ralph? No, that's Frank. Sorry. He went on a September 11th memorial podcast with that man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. I'm talking, of course, about the indicted and convicted and yet somehow strangely still free on the streets at large, Stevie Three Shirts. Oh, by the way, I didn't say thank you to Brandon and Fennell. And I didn't say thank you to Dave in Kentucky. Thank you both so much. And didn't give the fundraising goal. It is at $993.50. And it would be really helpful if we could knock that down, because yonder brutal Appalachian power coal-fried rickety-ass grid wants a lot of money in about 3 days. So the more the merrier, if you can help out. But anyway, Ralph Norman, patriotic American member of Congress from South Carolina, Stan, who, being a South Carolinian Republican conservative, has sedition running through his veins like most of us have blood. Well, you know who's just... And bear in mind, it wasn't all cringe all day long. Some people made good points. Earlier today on my Filthy Morning Habit, someone pointed out, I can't recall whom at this moment, pointed out that whereas it, back then the greatest threat to America was a 6 foot 6 inch tall disaffected Arab with a portable dialysis machine, where that was the case 22 years ago and a little before, the greatest threat facing America now is domestic terrorism. And it happens almost every day in this country. And God knows it happened on January the 6th, 2021. Hell, Osama bin Laden didn't try to overturn the government of the United States. He just liked to do evil shit and kill people and blow stuff up. It's worth recalling that even Al-Qaeda were surprised at what they wound up getting away with. Of course, had Al Gore, who was rightfully elected president back in 2000, had he been the president instead of having had George W. Bush, dim leader selected for us by primarily Sandra Day O'Connor. Thanks, Sandy. No, really. Thanks so much. Put that on her tombstone. 9/11 probably wouldn't have happened, because Al Gore had been vice president for 8 years under an administration which, though flawed, had tried to actually deal with the international terrorism threat. Whereas when the Hart-Rudman report was presented to Dim Leader's administration, they stuck it in a manila folder and handed it to a guy we still remember as being nicknamed Brownie, who, before he was tasked to head FEMA, had as his last job the presidency of the American Arabian Horse Association, which always reminds me of that line from Henry V. It is a fine and estimable horse. But off Brownie went with it, and it was never heard from again, when it was chock full of warnings about how people who hated us globally might be interested in using the extremely soft targets of American airports as a means of doing their nefarious deeds. And then, of course, there's the presidential daily briefing in August of 2001, mysteriously titled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S., which was also summarily dismissed and ignored by the Dim Leader administration, because Dim Leader wanted to go, and I wish I was kidding, cut brush on his ranch in Texas, where he rode the range in a golf cart and was scared shitless of horses. Well, to be fair, horses were a lot bigger than Dim Leader, and frankly, a lot smarter, too. But we all remember that. So that's all background. That's all background to Ralph Norman, an actual member of the House of Representatives who is oath sworn to support, defend, and support the Constitution of the United States, and, well, doesn't seem to think much of that oath. Again, seems to be a thing in South Carolina. But just as I have done, he wanted to reflect on the meaning of 9/11 and see if there was anybody, well, make comparisons to the here and now. Take it away, Ralph. You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
So at some point, we've got to make a stand. I think we are going to make a stand with the Freedom Caucus and many others, Eli Crane being one of the real heroes of what we're trying to do with government. But government's not going to do it on their own. And Osama bin Laden, he did his part to destroy it from the air, and the internal bureaucrats are doing their part to destroy it from the inside, unfortunately. And the Biden administration is front and center stage.
Yeah, because, you know, when I start thinking about who's like Osama bin Laden, well, bin Laden starts with B, and so does Biden. Wait, bin Laden starts with B-I, and so does Biden. And both bin Laden and Biden have a D. Oh, Jesus. And an E. And an N. Oh, my God! What a fucking idiot. Sorry, she's already dropping the F-bombs. And that whole destroy it from the inside trope has been around a while. And he's going, and bear in mind, when he said we got to make a stand, he wasn't talking about, Pickett's charge or anything. No, he was talking about government spending, which is another way of a maggot saying, we really don't like the fact that old people can eat food or go to the doctor. He said Biden administration, but I'll bet you if you got him sufficiently liquored up, he'd tell you that Joe Biden wasn't really the president of the United States. You wouldn't take that bet, would you? No. Well, greetings, says Randy Radar, from the formerly occupied Longwood Gardens area. Yeah, I take it the helicopters have they caught the murderous little hobbit, or is it just that he's moved on? Because I heard earlier today he was still at large. Yeah, Randy adding, America seems to celebrate our defeats. I bet Texas has Alamo days. Of course they do. And, you know, for a long time, the Alamo was celebrated on a national level. I remember reading something about that a few years ago. And the problem with getting out and celebrating the Battle of the Alamo is it happened between February 23rd and March 6th, and now the weather's not usually great that time of year. And so eventually, in-person commemorations sort of slowed and stopped. And, you know, eventually that'll happen with September 11th, too. It will. The same thing with the USS Maine. Again, the 15th of February, 1898. And when it blew up in Havana Harbor, 268 sailors, three-quarters of the crew of that dreadnought, perished. And for a while, that was commemorated until it sort of slipped from memory. And it's, frankly, it's hard even now in 2023, just 18 years from the 100th, imagine that, the 100th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And Pearl Harbor commemorations are, well, they still take place in Hawaii. And some people still remember that day, which FDR said shall live in infamy. Same thing with D-Day, June 6th, 1944. And it happens as the generation that experienced them gives way for subsequent generations. But that's not all the moranity, the 9/11 moranity that we have. No, no, no. There was more, because there always is. And I'd say if I just asked you right now, who else said something stupid today about 9/11? I would guess that within this quite knowledgeable little community, we happy few. Most of y'all would get it right. In fact, I'm receiving thought waves now. It's a little confusing because there's a lot of them, but they're all going, oh yeah, that's gotta be Marge. Gotta be Marge. Well, you're right. Marge offered up a tribute to September the 11th over on Shitter, Xitter, the X pronounced SH, posting a picture of the firefighters hoisting the American flag amid the rubble of the Twin Towers. Marge probably had somebody else type. Today, we remember the lives taken from us by the hands of Islamic terrorism 22 years ago. Americans are still dying and suffering from the toxic chemicals and dust they endured after the buildings fell. You know, I could go for a while talking about people breathing toxic dust and chemicals and ultra-fine particulates, because, well, every day is kind of, every day is a sort of 9/11 in terms of breathing poisonous filth if you're in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. Really? At one point in time, we calculated the explosive force of a single blast, and then multiplied those by 6 days, because they blast 6 days a week. You only get a break on Sunday. And throughout, if you aggregate them, it wound up being a Pearl Harbor about every 7 days. One single blast being the equivalent to something like 11 Tomahawk cruise missiles landing in the same place at the same time. Just one blast. So we know a little bit about that here in the forgotten corners of Appalachia. But Marge wasn't done. Let us also not forget the betrayal of everyone who died that fateful day by the Biden administration, who handed over weapons and ceded the territory we held in the Middle East to the Taliban, who works with Al-Qaeda, the very enemy we sought to defeat after decades of fighting and lost American lives. Hi, Marge. I realize that you would lose an IQ test with a paramecium, honey. But nonetheless, I have a strong urge toward edumacation. And we only went into the Middle East because, and I didn't hear that much of this today, and that's kind of the, well, to not mention what happened in the aftermath of 9/11, is to do a grave disservice to thousands of dead United States military personnel and other allied nations personnel, not to mention the million innocent Iraqi civilians who were murdered at the command of an illegitimate occupant of the White House. The first of two illegitimate occupants of the White House, both Republicans, that we have been forced to endure in this still relatively young century. We did not hold territory in the Middle East. We, if we are to be taken at face value, said that we, in fact, were not even occupiers there, and then proceeded to occupy Iraq and Afghanistan, and never had even the remotest chance of winning whatever it was that winning was. But yeah, so that's two maggots comparing murderous terrorists to an American president who did what the American people wanted, who in fact carried out the orders of his predecessor, the former guy who swore, listen, we never should have been in Afghanistan, we'll be out of Afghanistan by May of 2020. And then found out he couldn't do it, so President Biden resolutely took the reins in his teeth and said, get them out. And there was never going to be a right way to get them out. There's never a right way to end an unjust war. There's just ending the unjust war. As to the anniversary of 9/11, Stephen New York notes, on this day in 1985 in Cincinnati, Ohio, at 8:01 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Pete Rose, who should be in the Hall of Fame, lined a 2-1 pitch to left center field off of San Diego Padres pitcher Eric Schau to break Ty Cobb's record with hit number 4,192. Yes, I have committed this to memory. Well, I remember back in the earliest days of this program, September 11th, 2001 was not our first September 11th disaster. I think, September 11th, 1814 was the day that some very pissed off Canadians came down and held a barbecue in the White House and basically Washington, D.C. in general, and very little survived. And up until then, the White House hadn't been called the White House, but we were such a broke-ass country, all we could afford was whitewash and enslaved stolen labor to apply it to the building, and said, well, it's a White House in more ways than one. And the White House, it has ever remained. Steve adding, the South Carolina Saltine, Ralph Norman, will these fuckers please stop bathing in and drinking the blood of the New Yorkers who died on 9/11? Yeah, the Ralph Normans of the world and the Marges of the world don't much care for those folks from New York City. But by God, they will pick up and wave until it is dry in the wind a bloody shirt if it helps them to hurt more people. Ralph's telling me Keith Olbermann had some really good comments on his YouTube channel today. I have no doubt. I'll try to check that out after the program. Steve, Barack Obama's role in 9/11. Thank you, Jordan Klepper. It's the first 14 seconds that make one wonder. That's a bit too much of a that's too much of a tease for me to resist catnip like that. I think I know where this is going, but I'm not entirely certain, and I don't want to... Yeah. Okay, that's what I figured. It's a maggot with his maggot hat on. The clip is 2 years old. I have a feeling it's going to still be relevant.
Barack Obama had a big part of 9/11.
Which part?
Not being around, always on vacation, never in the office.
Why do you think Barack Obama wasn't in the Oval Office on 9/11?
That I don't know. We'd like to get to the bottom of that.
We don't even know if he's a citizen.
Yeah, if you don't look at the birth certificate, there's almost no evidence there.
Exactly.
So there's nothing Barack Obama...
But it's the first guy. Why do you think Barack Obama wasn't in office on September 11th, 2001? I don't know, he answers earnestly. But I'd like to get to the bottom of that. I mean, that guy's right up there with the get a brain morons.
Barack Obama had big part of 9/11.
Which part?
Not being around, always on vacation, never in the office.
Why do you think Barack Obama wasn't in the Oval Office on 9/11?
That I don't know. We'd like to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look at his name, right? Matt in San Francisco says, I propose we commemorate September 11th by imploding a Trump Tower every year until they are all gone. I'm nothing if not a uniter. No, wait. You can't... Doggone it, Matt. Now quit that. You can't be the uniter. We've already been told that Wee Wake Ramaswamy is the uniter here. And he'd never lie. Except, like, when he does, which is every time he opens his mouth, it's either a lie or something really dumb. Wee Wake, Dunning-Kruger, Ramaswamy. That's him. Oh, okay. Thank you for updating me, Randy Radar. The convict got a lot of help and ended up in Pottstown, PA, at his sister's place before he moved on. He's still on the run. Where's his incentive to turn himself in? Not rooting for him or anything. He's apparently dangerous. I mean, even hobbits, you know, if you give them a little elven short sword, can do a lot of damage. Oh, why did I go there? But there's one more 9/11 thing, and believe me, we've got more stuff than 9/11 to get into, but, you know, that's where we are. There is a progressive author, and he's a former man of the cloth, and over on Shitter, he still posts some relatively thought-provoking things. His name is John Pavlovitz. He's a Christian. You know, the real kind. And he posted over there a fairly simple statement. He said, if you don't grieve both 9/11 and 1/6, you aren't patriotic, you're partisan. And oh my Jesus, the maggots began heading straight up the trees. There was hooting and howling and barking and bleating and grunting and shrieking that was, I am certain, audible at Leon Scum's secret beach house on Mars.
Horribly misinformed, conflating two events that aren't remotely similar.
And another genius said,
so many people jumping to their death from the burning Capitol. Never forget.
And there was more than that, but it was a matter of people completely not getting it. And, of course, somebody had to post the photograph of the falling man. Probably the single most horrifying image from that day. But Pavlovitz's point was not that hard to get. They were both terrorist attacks. The difference being that you can argue that January 6, 2021, not in terms of loss of life, but in terms of gravity of the situation, was far worse because it involved American citizens engaging in treasonous, seditious, violent actions whose purpose was the overthrow of the government of the United States. Which, as I noted earlier, wasn't even Bin Laden's goal. He just wanted to create mayhem and see if he could sucker an Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I een may, hesitant prey, into a really stupid war. And that turned out, to Bin Laden's delight, to be like taking falafel from a baby. There's falafel again. They were both deadly. They were both dangerous. They were both domestic terror attacks on the United States. Pavlovitz explained himself and said, "Real patriots condemn all terrorist attacks on America. If you grieve 9/11 but ignore, dismiss, or even defend the January 6th attack on our capital, you aren't patriotic. You're politically partisan." I'll add, and a domestic terrorism sympathizer. There really is more similarity there than meets the eye. Both groups hated the American system of government, such as it is. Both groups despise democracy. One would rely on a bunch of bearded, berobed mullahs to interpret religious text and manifest it as law. The other was the Taliban. And so there is more than just 9/11. Flavio noting, "Oh, all the belly aching because Biden pulled the U.S. out of Afghanistan." Even in putatively liberal TV, MSNBC, Richard Engel complained on and on. I was glad, even proud, that Biden did what Obama could not. And what Trump could not. I mean, been at this a while, and I remember when Barack Obama said, Afghanistan was the right war for the right reasons. He was a good guy. Good president. Made mistakes. And every now and then, you got one of those that kind of, like when he was campaigning in 2008 and running around Appalachia saying, "I want to make, fill in the blank, the Saudi Arabia of coal." Man, I didn't want us to be the Saudi Arabia of anything. Because, you know, once you become the Saudi Arabia of something, they start getting their heads lopped off in parking lots with people trilling and shrieking as they eagerly watch on. Dave and the Blind, you were in one of those planes, weren't you? My cousin Griff converted to Islam from 35 years ago, well before the attacks on 9/11. My cousin had spina bifida. There were a bunch of proto-maggots living in his building in Muncie, Indiana. And I'll remind you that that's my assessment of my Republicans here in Taliban, Indiana. These good Christians accused my cousin, a man of peace who would never have harmed anyone, of being one of the attackers. It got to the point where Christine and I would come and get him and bring him to Indianapolis for a weekend just so he could decompress in a safe space. I bring this all up to let us remember the racism and vile bullshit that gave permission to these racist, terrorist-loving assholes known as MAGA Republicans. Sorry for the rant. Don't apologize. Your buddy Dave. Let us remember and let us make them remember what actually happened. Oh, there was a wave of racist attacks in the wake of 9/11. Muslims attacked. Sikhs, who are decidedly not Muslims, attacked. A wave of anti-Semitism as people spread a dirty lie that there were Mossad secret agents who, I don't know, worked with George W. Bush to put on little black boots and little black hats and plant little black bombs all over the World Trade Center. And that's one of those things, you know, it's a content warning, trigger warning day for me, because I don't just think about what happened in that moment or in those moments. I think about what happened before and what happened after. And how the United States government at a G20 summit, maybe, kept the president on a ship offshore because there had been warnings about Islamic terrorists wanting to use planes as missiles. And you can't commemorate this day, honestly, I don't think, without also commemorating the entire cesspit of lies that this moment extracted, and the statement, and very few people really know about this, but the statement by Paul Wolfowitz, who gave the commencement address at West Point in June of 2001. The remaining officers who are still alive from that graduating class, my goodness gracious, they're probably bird colonels or more now. But in that commencement address, he said, "I can't tell you what's going to happen, but something big is going to happen, and I can't tell you when, and I can't tell you where, but I can tell you to be prepared. Be ready." And it's general enough that you could plausibly argue that, well, I mean, that didn't, you know, It wasn't specific, so, but damn. And it was almost 3 months to the day from 9/11/2001. Oh, well, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Things That Happened on 9/11 Research Department, Steve says, 1814, Battle of Lake Champlain, New York, American Navy defeats British. Begun on the 6th of September, Americans defeat the British at the Battle of Plattsburgh during the War of 1812. 1839, first Canadian track and field meet held at Care Howell Grounds. Uh, 1853, first electric telegraph used. Merchants exchanged San Francisco to Point Lobos, California. Oh, yes, and there, highlighted in red, 1857, September 11th, 1857. The Mountain Meadows Massacre. Mormons dressed as Indians murdered 120 non-Mormon colonists in Utah. And then, truly a great moment in American history. Thank you, Steve. September 11th, 1916. Clarence Saunders opens the Piggly Wiggly, the first self-service supermarket in Memphis, Tennessee. How about that? So it's 107 years old, the Wiggling Pig. And still a delightful shopping experience. In 1922, the British Mandate of Palestine begins. 1959, Congress passes a bill authorizing food stamps for poor Americans. Steve adds, religious Muslims during the pandemic. There is a masjid in my neighborhood. It was heartening and humbling to see that a person, no matter their age, they were wearing masks as they waited in line to enter for, I think it was for Ramadan prayers in the midst of the beginnings of the pandemic, before we closed the houses of worship. Matt in San Francisco says, Paul Wolfowitz, he should have been jailed for licking his comb and then running it through his hair. Good God, do you know where that comb has been? Wait a minute. Did Ariel find a comb at the bottom of the sea? Ariel, no! It's Paul Wolfowitz's. Honey, put it down. But a lot of people, I mean, there was a real surge in, because, you know, just read Mark Twain's The War Prayer and you'll understand everything. But there was a rather significant surge in enlistments following September 11th. And by the, I think, the second term of Dim Leader, the second reign of error, things got so bad, maybe it was a late first term, early second term, but recruiting had gotten so bad, because people began to figure out that it was a pathetic tissue of lies, the war on Iraq. Fuck Saddam, we're taking him out. He tried to kill my daddy. We found him in a spider hole. Well, recruiting got so bad that the military actually decided to say, listen, you got a conviction for running dope. You got a conviction for rape. You know what? We'll overlook that. Come on in. Yeah, long as you're not firing up at basic and not raping anybody in the barracks, you'll be okay. Yeah, come on. You're gonna love Iraq. Oh, the mountains of Afghanistan. Truly majestic to behold. But it is kind of weird to realize that there are now young people enlisting in the military, because 9/11 was 22 years ago now. There are young people enlisting in the military who weren't even born by September 11th, 2001. And the reason I mention this is because of three active duty Marines. Three active duty Marines who were part of the domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021. Well, a Marine named Dodge Helonen. Helonen? He's got a brother named Chrysler and another brother named Plymouth. And yeah. Baby sister named Jeep. No, I don't know. Dodge Helonen was an active duty Marine on January 6, 2021. When he and two of his Marine brothers joined in the domestic terror attack on the Constitution and got themselves charged with parading in the Capitol. They were posted in Virginia. They drove to Washington, D.C. on the urging of Nitwit Nero to stop the steal. And after Nitwit Nero said, "You've got to fight like hell," they joined the rest of the domestic terrorist mob in attacking the Capitol. The three Marines were only charged with a misdemeanor. The prosecutors went light on them and asked the judge to give Helonen and his buddy a bait, 21 days in jail, and they wanted 30 days for their buddy Coomer, who seemed to be the ringleader. They wanted them all to have 60 hours of community service. The prosecution in the sentencing brief said that, yeah, great, they joined the military, but then what they did on January 6th becomes all the more troubling. And here's something that just I don't get. Being on active duty in the United States Marine Corps and engaging in a domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States in violation of the oath that you swore ain't enough to get you drummed out. It's not enough to get you a dishonorable discharge. It's not enough to get you a regular discharge. He just got his job changed. Helonen was a signals analyst. And they changed his duty station to being someone who inventories gear. But he got to stay a Marine. And I presume will be honorably discharged. The parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building charge carries with it a maximum of 6 months behind bars. It's been described as kind of like trespassing. Dodge Helonen brought with him his very own urine-colored snake flag. And when they went for a stroll in the rotunda, they took a red maggot hat, the modern equivalent of a Klan hood, and put that cap, that hat on a statue there in the rotunda, and took souvenir photos of it, selfies of it. And the rest of the time, they wandered around the building, grunting about, "Stop the steal!
4 more years.
And as prosecutors noted, none of the three has expressed any remorse whatsoever for what they did. Coomer, the brains of the outfit, presumptively. Well, he was terribly, terribly moved by it all and said that he'd been part of history and said he wanted a fresh start, and he was, and this is one of those loaded terms, that he was waiting for the boogaloo. It's a racist term used by white nationalists, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, Nazis, and the like. And in the argot of that filthy underweb of the net, it's a second civil war. And that second civil war is projected in their own twisted, sick little minds to be racist in nature, a race war. The prosecution said of Coomer, not Dodge Halonen, that Coomer was, said he was hoping for a second civil war to topple what he viewed as a corrupt government, and that that was deeply ominous, given that his military training and access to military weapons would make him a particularly effective participant in such a war against the government. It was January 18th of this year when law enforcement finally caught up with Coomer at a military office in Oceanside, California. They got a bait at his home in Maryland, and they found Dodge Halonen, where he lived, in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Prosecutors said they are all still active duty Marines, but they could be separated from the Corps on less than honorable conditions. Abate is still in the Corps as of September 1. Coomer's still waiting for a decision on his possible separation, and Halonen got separation paperwork in July. Halonen, Dodge Halonen, originally hails from Michigan. Sorry, Joy. Sorry, Micah. And he'd made it all the way to sergeant. And he, Halonen, knows, well, that he shouldn't have entered the Capitol. You know, it doesn't seem like it should be that much of a reach to know that before you enter the Capitol. But I buried the lead on this one. I did. The case was heard by U.S. District Judge Ana Reyes. And she said, well, I just don't understand why you did this. You swore an oath to protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. But she didn't go so far as to say that he himself became one of those domestic enemies of the Constitution. No, scolding him, Judge Reyes said, I really urge you to think about why it happened so you can address it and ensure it never happens again. And then she imposed sentence. That's exactly what I thought. Tom and Sonny San Rafael saying, Dodge Halonen. Did you mean Harkonnen? He seems it, doesn't he? I bet he's not as cute as Sting, though. The original Dune movie. I'm a purist. Shame on me. Thank you for reading my mind, Tom. I really appreciate it. No, after sternly telling Dodge Halonen how disappointed she was in him and how he needs to think about why it happened. Well, she threw the book at him. No, not really. It was more of like a pamphlet or possibly a flyer. I don't know that it actually hit him. She sentenced him to zero time in jail. And 279 hours of community service. The 279 hours had significance, according to Judge Reyes. She said that was 1 hour for every Marine who was killed or wounded fighting in the Civil War. I guess that means there were fewer Marines killed or wounded in the Civil War than there were in 1814 or the Mexican War. Or the Spanish-American War. God knows World War I and World War II and Korea and Vietnam. So that was the fewest number of dead and wounded Marines she could find for coming up with a number to impose a slap on the wrist against a vile and vulgar oath breaker. Kind of wonder what she's got in store for Coomer and for Abate. I don't think he's going to learn anything from that. Do you? And I saw a headline today from Agence France-Presse. Talking about the fact that here in September, not even mid-September of 2023, two-thirds of the way through the year, well, we've had a record-setting year for billion-dollar disasters. Most of them, if not all, attributable to climate change. Between January and August, not even counting any of September, the country's been hit by 23 weather and climate disasters where losses exceeded $1 billion in each case. The previous record was 22 in 2020. So odds are that 23 in 23 will actually wind up being 24 or 25, maybe even 26 in 23. The Maui fires, California flooding, Hurricane Idalia. According to the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, there were 253 direct and indirect fatalities and more than $57.6 billion in damages. And they still haven't tallied up the totals for Tropical Storm Hillary and the southern and midwestern drought. And Rachel Cletus, who is the policy director with the Climate and Energy Program of the Union and Concerned Scientists, said, said, these record-breaking numbers during a year that's on track to be one of the hottest ever are sobering and the latest confirmation of a worsening trend in costly disasters, many of which bear the undeniable fingerprints of climate change. And we're on track for 2023 to be the hottest year in human history. Northern Hemisphere warm weather temperatures have been the hottest on record. That according to the European Union Climate Monitor. And so, Ms. or Dr. Cletus's, AFP didn't make clear, assessment is true. They bear the undeniable fingerprints of climate disaster. But when I read that headline, yeah, something clicked in my poor little brain. U.S. hit by record number of billion-dollar disasters so far this year. And I immediately heard some random, as yet unnamed, but bound to be certain, maggot yakhead
saying, well, of course it's a record number of $1 billion of disaster. That's what you get with Joe Biden's inflation, you know? This would be pipsqueak pissant disasters if it wasn't for Joe Biden inflating the prices of everything.
I hate it like that when I think like that. By the way, the number 279, one day for every dead Marine from the Civil War for Dodge Helonen. Steve in New York said, I'm thinking more like 1 year for each Marine killed during the Civil War. Well, sadly, she was statutorily prevented from that, but, yeah. Why didn't she just give him the 3 weeks in jail? You know, there's probably a halfway intelligent answer for that. She didn't want him spending 3 weeks among people who would likely radicalize him anymore. Because he probably would have. And meanwhile, in other January 6th news, here's Ryan Zink. No, not the same Zinke. This is Z-I-N-K, not Z-I-N-K-E. This isn't the crook who was in the Trump administration. No. Ryan Zink made videos of himself charging the Capitol on January 6th, and he's in court now. And he's come up with a novel defense. Yeah, he's from Arizona, Ryan Zink is. His daddy is a real Lulu maggot. He was also present on the Capitol grounds on January 6th, Jeff Zink. He ran for Congress against Ruben Gallego, and Ruben Gallego thumped him like the little tin drum that he was, and beat him by 54 points. But, well, Ryan Zink, son of Jeff, said that the only reason he was so belligerent in his videos, which he posted to social media. Ryan Zink screaming, "We're storming the Capitol! They can't stop us!" Put it on Facebook. But addressing the court, Ryan Zink said, "Oh, listen, I had to really act crazy. Because other people were posting stuff too, and I was in competition with their live streams. I'm embellishing my activity here to try to retain viewership." Oh dear, it's time to turn off social media, isn't it? Because this is an affirmative defense of, yeah, I did it. But I did it for my numbers. Cause you know that little dopamine hit I get when I see my numbers go up. Well, Your Honor, I mean, if you've never felt it, oh my. He claimed to have entered the Capitol, but he never actually did. And I don't know. Maybe the judge will sentence him to some indeterminate number of hours of community service for every message he's ever received through the fillings in his teeth. And we had Marge earlier. There was a previous Marge sighting. Back on Friday, Marge was grieving the passing of Njord Jord Meacham. Jord was 22 years old. He was from Utah. He went in onto the Capitol January 6th, raised the maggot flag at a broken window. Two weeks ago, he was finally busted. And, Marge was grieving him because he's dead. There is no published report. There is no obituary. No media source has reported a suicide on Jord's part. But Marge, well, you know, Marge is still plugged into the domestic terror network, and she said,
U.S. Attorney Matthew Graves is now responsible for fourth suicide by another J6er because of extreme persecution of J6 defendants. Jord Meacham, she loved him, but she couldn't spell his name, was 19 years old when he nonviolently walked in the Capitol. Biden's communist regime has destroyed justice and stolen hope.
Call me crazy, but I don't think it was Joe Biden who told the Jord Meachams of the world that they would have to fight like hell to get him installed as president or to stop the steal. As far as I'm concerned, that's just another death that goes on the list of a million or so during American citizens during the Trump nightmare. people responded to her usual idiocy. Republicans are only upset about the criminal justice system in America when it's applied to white people. Selling cigarettes on the street while black and murdered by cops, not so much. Gotta blame Trump for this one. One of these days, I hope that some prosecutor, some enterprising investigatory lawyer, can finally connect all the dots that put Marge smack dab in the middle of the domestic terror attack planning. She wasn't even a member of Congress, so she doesn't have speech and debate to protect her during those November and December months of 2020. She still looks like an awful lot like the bomber of January the 5th. You know, Watergate had deep throat. Maybe she's deep spork. I don't know. By the way, we've crossed into the second hour of this Moran Monday. As Stephen New York notes, my Uncle Ron would have been 79 today, so I'd like to put out a $7.90 challenge. That would be great, because that would turn into, let's see, 14. That'd turn into $15.80 and get us down from $9.93.50 to, oh God, I'm fooling with loose change again. That never works well. Let's see, $9.78.70, I think. Thank you, Steve, and happy memories of your Uncle Ron. And by the way, the phones are open if anybody wants to engage in conversation. Listen, if you're new to the program, and hey, maybe you've never even called a talk program before, this program is probably easier than any others, because we're not going to break up the flow of your conversation or your thought with either hard or soft breaks. And you get a chance to actually speak your mind, say what's on it. You know, assuming you're not a Republican. This is a maggot-free zone. But, yeah, people of goodwill, jump right in. The toll-free stress line number, named for our dear friend Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 844-843-4676. I've only been saying that for you. Where'd the 866 come from? 844-843-4676. 844, the horn. On Skype, well, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, H-O-R-N. Send me a contact request, and I will accept it, and we will be conversating before you even know it. John in Central PA says, MTG. You know who should look into Marge? Merrick Garland. I still don't understand why no fascist maggot member of Congress is being looked at for J6. Please don't say they're playing four-dimensional chess. No, they're not. Now, that's why I drew the distinction. Marge was not even a member of Congress during November and December of 2020. I know it feels like she's been a member of Congress since Christ was a corporal in the army of God, because she's just so loathsome and won't shut the fuck up and total little attention tramp. But she wasn't. So she is not protected by the speech and debate clause. The question is, to what extent did the speech and debate clause protect other members who were already members of the House? And beyond that, John, I know you get frustrated, but how do you know the investigation is not ongoing, especially in light of the fact that we are constantly receiving press statements that the investigation is ongoing? Don't indict the kingpins until you've got the little piss ants at the base of the pyramid. They will lead you to the kingpins. And in all fairness, while we think that she and others were guilty little sacks of sin, convictions do require evidence. And evidence requires development. They haven't given up on trying to figure out who the bomber was. They just don't have a shit ton of evidence, and nobody has spilled the beans yet. But the more people they prosecute, the more likely the bean spillage takes place. By the way, back to that record number of billion-dollar disasters in the U.S., as Steve notes, there are over about 400 billionaires in the U.S. I'll even let them keep 1 billion of their fortunes. I figure we could take enough of their wealth to deal with, I'd estimate, about 3,000 billion-dollar events. Yeah. Of course, I remember when George W. Bush started Bush War II, and we talked about all the highways and all the schools, all the bridges we could build, and how we could become fossil fuel negative, carbon neutral, with that money. And the response was, well, you're comparing apples and persimmons. We've always got to have money for killing brown people. And that's how it works. Now, Steve says, I'll always weigh in on the indictments question. The DOJ has limited resources and is probably stretched to the limits as it is also, and this is a thing to always remember, if you're going to shoot at the king or queen in this instance, you must not miss. Okay, wait a minute. I gotta get rid of that. Oh, where else and what else? Because there's plenty. Mark Meadows, the insurrectionist chief of staff to Nitwit Nero. Well, last week, U.S. District Court Judge Steve Jones said, no, Mark, your criminal case is going to stay in Fulton County Superior Court. It's not coming to this courtroom. And so now Meadows has filed an emergency motion seeking a stay of the ruling pending appeal. That was to be expected, and yes, The district judge did, in fact, grant the motion. And Jones said, in the exercise of the court's discretion, the court orders expedited briefing. It's not a disaster. This is just how these things play out. And so now it will go up to those wild-eyed maggots of the 11th Circuit. The three-judge panel, if I were betting, I would say, well, probably. Overturn U.S. District Court Judge Steve Jones. But they will be stayed when Fani Willis requests an en banc hearing by the full 11th Circuit. And one way or another, this winds up before our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties in Washington, D.C. It's frustrating, I know. But this is not in any wise untoward or even unusual. I just didn't want y'all seeing that little piece of news and thinking, oh, God damn it. It would have been legal malpractice for Meadows Pettifoggers not to file that. Most important, says Flavio. People must overwhelmingly reject Trump in the next election or all bets are off. I'm thinking if the midterms were any indication, this will happen, and we haven't had any trials yet. Flavio, I think there's a consensus in the Horn family community congregation that Nitwit Nero should be the nominee of his party. The Republicans, as white colonizers of this hemisphere once said, the Indians hear only through their buttocks. What a repulsive thing. But I think it's true where the maggots are concerned. They're going to have to wear the rotting, stinking carcass of the albatross around their neck that Donald Trump is before they finally learn their lesson. In fact, I think it was Chris Christie who addressed the issue. Yeah, he went on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Chris Christie did. And engaged in a conversation with Howie Kurtz. God, is he still around? And Howie Kurtz was butt hurts. See what I did there? That Chris Christie is saying mean things about Howie's Orange God Emperor.
Violent crime. I looked at a piece in Politico that concluded people go to see Christie because he tells them exactly what they want to hear about Trump. He's not persuading anybody who's not already convinced. I take it you have a different view.
Yeah, how did those people get persuaded in the first place? I mean, look, Howie, you know, we're going to have every pundit in the world out there giving their opinion from talking to three or four voters when they go to a state, you know, and then they think they're experts. I've spoken to now thousands of voters in 3 months. And what I can tell you is that they want the truth. The American people are tired of being lied to. They're tired of being lied to by Joe Biden when he said the other day that he's reduced the deficit, when in fact he's going to double the deficit this year. They're tired of being lied to by Donald Trump when he says the election in 2020 was stolen. And that's all he wants to talk about going forward is that and the fact that he's out on bail in four different jurisdictions. I mean, let's face it, Howie, this is a guy who's going to be sitting in a courtroom for all of March and most of April defending himself for trying to interfere with the peaceful transfer of power rather than making the case against Joe Biden.
Well, you said it would be disastrous for the Republican Party right in the midst of the primaries. The first federal trial of the former president is supposed to begin day before Super Tuesday. But 60% of Republicans consistently say they don't buy these charges. They think it's bogus. They think it's partisan. They think it's weaponization of law enforcement. So are you misjudging the current state of the GOP?
No. I think the questions are wrong. You can believe that these charges are unfair. But there are two things. One, we have to deal with them. Whether you think they're unfair or not, they are going to impact independent voters and soft Democrats in the general election. Both sets of people we need to win a general election as Republicans. And Donald Trump cannot win those people while he's under indictment in four cases. But secondly, let's look at the conduct. This is a guy who stole classified documents from the White House, hid them from his own lawyers, hid them from the government for 18 months.
Oof.
And on January 6th, he told those folks the election was stolen. That's a lie. He asked them to march up to Capitol Hill, said he would walk with them. But Howie, you and I both know if that Donald Trump has a risk of breaking a fingernail, he's not going to take that risk. He sat in his office for 3 hours and watched the people that he had lied to and sent up to Capitol Hill desecrate Capitol Hill. Now, I just think that's conduct that's beneath what we should expect from a president of the United States. And if you don't think that these charges and that conduct are going to be a major focus in the general election if we nominate Donald Trump, you're kidding yourself. And we're going to lose. And that's going to mean huge government, even more out of control than it is today, with a feeble president of the United States being dictated to by the worst elements of his party.
But did Trump defuse your strategy of going toe-to-toe with him by staying off the debate stage and saying, since he's got a big lead nationally in the national polls, that he is not going to do any of the debates?
Well, if he doesn't do any of the debates, Howie, you know, we're going to give him another chance. I'm sure he's not coming to the Reagan debate. We'll give him another chance in Alabama. But if he doesn't come there, then I'm going to follow him around the country. Wherever he goes, I'll go. And we'll wind up talking to each other one way or the other. And he knows that's true.
You're going to change your travel schedule to go where Trump goes, just so I'm clear.
You bet.
You bet. There is one caveat that goes with all of this. I mean, it feels like the smart money is on the truth of what Chris Christie is saying. You know, not about big government or government in control of our lives or any of that other fulsome, blathering horseshit that is the stock in trade of the Republican Party and the maggots generally. And, I mean, they've been grunting about big government since, you know, Newt Gingrich was on his first wife, literally and figuratively. Chris Christie, Steve in New York, says, I don't like the guy, but what he said, there's an excellent roadmap and focus for the Democrats with independents, Republican, and with Trump fatigue and suburban women in particular. Yes, but like I said, there's also a caveat. I'm so old, I can remember when Miss Lindsay, who thought he was presidential timber back in 2016, jumped into the political fray and said, if we elect Donald Trump, it's going to be the end of the Republican Party, and we're going to deserve it. Oh, he was so butch that day. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, granted, Chris Christie, being a lawyer, expresses it a little bit more cogently. I mean, Lindsay's a lawyer, too, I guess. But, well, Chris Christie said, if we nominate Donald Trump, you're kidding yourself. And we're going to lose. And I don't know if that's confirmation bias or if that's factual. It feels factual. Because unless the American people are entirely brain dead stupid, and why do I... And it's not the American people. It's too significant a portion, too significant a noisy minority of the American people are that goddamn dumb. I mean, I was driving home from the Wiggling Pig earlier today, and I noticed a brand new Trump 2024 flag fluttering from a house right there by the side of the road. And I was driving, so I couldn't do the facepalm or the Picard. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But it's like, wow. As Christy said, he's out on bail in four different states. But the flags and the hats and the, for all I know, thongs are still moving. God. But we want to believe it. Because the other side of the coin is that the multimillionaire for-profit media are still out there hustling the same old Biden's so old bullshit. Biden's so old. How old is he? Biden's so old, he farts dust. And yet somehow a guy who can ride a bicycle at 80 is less healthy than a guy whose life is put at risk by a cheeseburger? A guy who grips, death grips the Prime Minister of the UK's arm simply trying to traverse a simple walkway? A guy who was terrified to go out in the rain in France and would not honor the fallen of the Battle of the Marne, Belleau Woods, the Ardennes. But I guess it sells pixels, right? Not pickles, pixels. Or soap, or soup, or prescription medication, or whatever it is they advertise on My Filthy Morning Habit and other places. But I think, and then they go on, America doesn't want a rematch. What is this, boxing? Granted, this isn't Ali Frazier. But this bears the... It bears a similar rhythm to... No more dynasty politics, which you may recall was something that we heard a lot of during the Great Purity Wars of 2016. Because I do remember that. And God, he does get wearisome. But Nitwit Nero marked, he had to mark the anniversary of September 11th, 2001. And it was as, well, maybe not as noxious as you would expect, but it was plenty noxious all on its own.
No one who lived through the horror of the September 11th terrorist attacks.
And he's, I don't know if he's at Bedminster or if he's down in Mogilardass. He's flanked by two American flags. He's standing in front of a portrait of an English fox hunt. I'm not kidding. Those are always big at country clubs and tacky little golf motels. And apparently is yelling at the camera.
No one who lived through the horror of the September 11th terrorist attacks can ever forget the agony and the anguish of that terrible day. It was a terrible day.
Yeah, it was a terrible day. That's when he ad-libs, when he repeats himself. I've got here, as I've mentioned before, a copy of one of my favorite novels, Still Life with Woodpecker by Tom Robbins. And in it, well, the protagonist is a guy named Bernard Mickey Wrangell, a bomber known as the Woodpecker. And Bernard Mickey Wrangell was adopted and raised by a failed Hollywood cowboy named Dude Wrangell, who said everything twice, and little baby Wrangell, because that's all they could come up with for a name, was baby, learned to say everything twice, just like his adopted daddy. And so when they abandoned him in Walla Walla, Washington, God, I love that book. The last thing he ever said to his adoptive parents were, "Wait for baby, you sons of bitches! Wait for baby, you sons of bitches!" And I think of that every time I hear Nitwit Nero repeat himself, because he thinks he's got a good line and he's got a hammer at home.
The September 11th terrorist attacks can ever forget the agony and the anguish of that terrible day. It was a terrible day.
It was a terrible day.
The images of dark plumes of smoke billowing over Lower Manhattan, the Pentagon, and a field of Pennsylvania. Such a beautiful field.
It was a beautiful field. God, if this man wasn't so fucking dangerous, he'd be hilarious.
That field in Pennsylvania, such a beautiful field. Beautiful, believe me.
Are seared into our minds forever. We will never forget. Today, on this solemn anniversary of those monstrous attacks,
monstrous,
we remember the 2,977 precious souls
precious
who were savagely taken from us
savagely,
on that morning 22
me.
Years ago, leaving a void that can never be filled, no matter what happens.
I was just kind of guessing which one he would repeat.
Can never be filled, can never be filled. Wait for baby, you sons of bitches, wait for baby.
Can never be filled. We will say a prayer for each of the beautiful families they left behind, whose pain is beyond comprehension, what they've got.
Now he says he's going to say a prayer. We, you know, him and that mouse in his pocket. I don't know, maybe melanoma will hold a black mass at midnight or something. But that's 2,900 prayers.
Okay, God. I told him I'd send up a prayer for each one of them. This is going to be a collective prayer, okay? We'll just take it as read that I've already read all the names, okay? Take care of the families and make sure none of them are on any juries that convict me of anything. Okay? I'm not asking, God, I'm telling. We're not negotiating. Remember me, I'm the deal maker.
Gone through is not even believable. We honor the firefighters, the great New York PD, the Police Department, what great people they are.
Great people.
They are so great.
Mm-hmm.
And the Port Authority officers, the Virginia, D.C., and Pentagon police, and the military service members and other first responders, actually all over the country, they acted with supreme heroism and...
But not the FBI. They raided my tacky-ass golf motel in Florida. Not them.
They went to the site of the most heinous crime. They would leave other states far away and go to the World Trade Center site, the Pentagon. They'd go to Pennsylvania.
Beautiful
in many
field.
Cases, gave their lives in the line of duty. God bless the memory of all of those who perished in the 9/11 attacks. We will never, ever forget. We will never forget you. We love you. God bless their families, and God bless America. Thank you.
And, of course, there's a donation pitch at the end. Text Trump to OMFG.
Terrible, the beautiful field. With all that beautiful debris.
Yeah, Randy Radar said, don't forget the dancing Israelis. I thought I mentioned the dancing Israelis, or was it the dancing Mossad, or was it the dancing... All that misinformation, disinformation. By the way, he posted all that crap on Tripe Social, which I have described now for a very long time as a rickety, wobbling, wheels coming off, falling apart at the seams affair. Well, last week, Digital World Acquisition Corp. and Trump Media and Technology Group got a new lease on something resembling life, because shareholders gave them an extension to finish up a merger. But it may not help. Because Digital World Acquisition Corp. has a... liquidation deadline. And they bought a little time on it, but the Wall Street Journal says, quote, Trump Media needs regulators to approve financial statements documenting its recent business performance. Those things don't even show up on milk cartons. They're so disappeared. And the thing is, if that liquidation deadline arrives, Digital World Acquisition Corp. is going to have to give $300 million back to investors, and Nitwit Nero won't get a cent. Since that rattle trap went online in 2020, Tripe Social has lost 50% of its users. And Julian Klimochko, who runs a hedge fund at called Special Purpose Acquisition Company for an outfit called Accelerate Financial Technology, said, it's wildly overvalued. We just haven't seen anything by way of revenue, users on the platform, or anything else. It's extremely difficult to judge how viable this actually is. Why, look. It's the Trump Steaks, Trump Vodka, and Trump University of crummy-ass social media platforms. Wall Street Journal went on to say, Digital World acknowledges the risks the merger faces. The company said in a regulatory filing that Trump's legal issues could damage its reputation, distract him from the business, or force him to resign as chairman. Now, when the Journal reached out to Trump Media,
a spokes creep there, Shannon Devine, declined to comment about Truth Social or the deal. And she said,
the Wall Street Journal's questions range from knowingly false absurdities to malicious defamatory falsehoods.
So they said, well, okay, Shannon. Could you tell us which questions contain falsehoods?
No.
But they do. Because my checks are still clearing. It still beggars the mind to think that there are people out there willing to work for that man. Yeah, any port in a storm, I guess. And there are rumblings inside the razor slim majority that the maggots hold in the House. Do you ever see the classic Alec Guinness comedy, Kind Hearts and Coronets? I think he plays five different roles. And he plays a potential inheritor of an estate, or a guy as a potential inheritor of an estate in England, but he's like sixth in line. And he sees his only way forward to get the legacy as being a matter of bumping off the five who are in front of him. And there's there's a vicar. Alec Guinness plays all five of the people in front of the potential inheritor. I mean, I think this was made in 1946, so I don't think it qualifies as a spoiler. The potential legatee goes about the business of bumping off the aforementioned five in front. Well, the House majority's a little like that. Take, for instance, the state of Alabama, who has once again lost in their abject refusal to do what the Supreme Court of the United States, yeah, those guys, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties, told them to do, which is to create a second majority black congressional district in the state of Alabama. That happened this past summer. The Alabama legislature went into special session, came back out and said, nope, we're not going to do it. Got dragged back into court, lost again. And they keep losing. And so the panel set to draw the maps has drawn the maps, and Alabama says, we won't do it, and we're going to the Supreme Court. And what they're desperately trying to do is to drag this out so that they will not have to create this second majority black district in time for the 2024 elections. Because adding a second majority black district in Alabama might very well mean adding a second black member of Congress who will very likely be a Democrat, and thus thinning the ranks, not quite Alec Guinness style, but thus thinning the ranks of Kevers' man of silly putty McCarthy's dwindling majority. And with the shutdown, the shutdown game of chicken going on, and a number of Republicans in that majority unwilling to accede to an impeachment inquiry of Joe Biden for no apparent reason. I don't mean their refusals for no apparent reason. I mean the impeachment. Jesus Christ. it's setting up some rather tense days for Kevers. Because on the other side of that are the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings of the Feedum carcass, who are saying that, by God, there is no way under the sun that they will vote to raise the debt ceiling or pass a continuing resolution absent a promise to launch the impeachment of Joe Biden. It would seem to be a matter of the immovable object and the irresistible force. And so Nancy Mace, she's one of those, occasionally, you know, on days they'll have awes in them that she don't pronounce. Ain't no way there's going to be any impeachment inquiry. And she showed up on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and went right after Matt. It just gets worse. Come on, you and him fight.
Ways and means, because the American people deserve nothing less than the truth, and they can decide for themselves what should happen.
And there is the fight. So there are two things on the Republicans' plate in the House come Tuesday. It's not just the impeachment inquiry, mm-hmm. but also funding the government, a potential continuing resolution as you tackle the funding the government and the appropriations bills. But those are kind of a push and pull, if you will. I know that among the House Freedom Caucus, other conservatives have urged Speaker McCarthy to force deeper spending cuts, attach GOP priorities mm-hmm. to any short or long-term bill that the likes of Matt Gaetz, he wants an impeachment inquiry. Some people feel that the impeachment inquiry is being kind of dangled as a carrot, as a shiny object, in order to get a continuing resolution pushed through. How does this play out in getting at least the government funded in the short run?
Well, impeachment is just window dressing. It's not going to go anywhere. We need real mm-hmm. spending cuts. We need, you know, real measures. I mean, and when we look at the potential for a government shutdown in the next couple of weeks, it'll happen before
spending
October
cuts.
If it happens at all. Mm-hmm. That is a real risk right now. But a lot of folks on the right are going to want to blame Biden and Democrats and the left. But I got to tell you, we're here today because both sides, Republicans and Democrats, have spent into oblivion. And it's untenable. And if there is a shutdown, it'll be up to the executive branch. If the Senate and House can't get their act together to prioritize spending in a piece of legislation, it'll be up to the executive branch to prioritize that spending.
Spent themselves into oblivion. Oh, shut up. But she is correct in that, I mean, they can have that. You know, if they can cobble together enough people to vote for a bill of impeachment, well, there we are. But on the other hand, and bless his heart, because I love this, John Fetterman, junior senator, Democrat from Pennsylvania, for whom I have abiding respect, told the maggots, you think you got the votes? You think you got the votes to impeach Joe Biden? Do it. I dare you. Because you're going to lose and it's going to make you look like garbage. And you'll lose even more in 24. Kind of like that notion of a maggot slogan. Lose more in 24. Yeah, and some of this is, you know, I hate to say that Nancy Mace is right. She's right for the wrong reasons. You'll notice that she went all both-siderism. Ugh. but it's a loser. And for people, and for Republicans, and there are several who live in and serve ostensibly in districts that Biden carried and will carry again in 2024, they're going to be hammerable. And between things like if Alabama gets its second majority black district and they do the impeachment thing, the House is in play. But it really does show you who Kevers McCarthy is. He's not a leader. He doesn't even have any particular talent. For what he's doing. And they own him. The feedum carcass does. But now he's being parted out by the, we'd like to keep our miserable Republican seats that are in Biden districts carcass. So like I said, come on. Let's them and them fight. Because I'm here for the popcorn. Oh, what's that, Ralphs? Oh, this looks fun. Yeah, it's another marginal trailer queen sighting. She's just a gift that keeps on giving. I guess she's pissed off about the Biden administration whipping Greg Assbot's ass in federal court last week. If the Biden administration refuses to stop the invasion of cartel-led human and drug trafficking into our country, states should consider seceding from the Union. From Texas to New York City to every town in America, we're drowning from Biden's traitorous America last border policies. Hold on there, Marge. I just happen to have this tab open. Funny how that works. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. There's our old friend, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment again. And the language of Section 3 is interesting. Because during the entirety of the Civil War, there was, and Lincoln was a participant in it, an ongoing discussion about what to do at the end of the war, because the Union was going to win. Just took a while for them to take that other hand from behind their backs. But how to even view the Civil War itself? That's why it was referred to as variously the Civil War, as well as the war between the states, and
down south, that recent unpleasantness, and especially the war of northern aggression, you know, when the traitors fired the first fucking shot. And so you get that line in section 3, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the Constitution of the United States. There's no specific verbiage as to taking up arms. I would argue, and I don't think it's entirely cockamamie on my part, that preaching secession is part of that. Not just between 1859 and 1865, but at a date at a date not necessarily certain in the future. Or given aid and comfort to the enemies thereof. Who would be very, very happy if the United States were to fracture into a bunch of seceded petty kingdoms? China, Mother Muscovy, and Putty? Hell, our partners in peace, the Saudis, would probably love it. And that's, you know, and again, what she said there is not covered under speech and debate. You can't go on Shitter and say that you are engaging in the speech and debate clause. You're just another maggot on Shitter. And she thinks she's being clever by saying, if the Biden administration refuses, states should consider seceding. And if and consider are her outs. But it's still secession talk. And it still reminds me of the first time secession talk came around. It didn't even necessarily have anything to do with enslavement. When Andy Jackson said, I will get on my horse here in Washington, D.C., and I will ride to South Carolina, and I will hang the first secessionist I find, and then I will ride until I find another one, and I will hang secessionists until there are no more secessionists to hang in South Carolina. Because nullification and secession were a constant risk to the young republic. You may recall that I've noted in the past that the first time secession started getting grumbled about, it wasn't even a southern state. It was New Hampshire, who were pissed off that they were sort of being shoved around by bigger economic interests like, you know, Massachusetts to the south, or New York, or Connecticut. That's how and this idea of nullification, which Texas has been involved in with their razor wire barrel barrier designed to torture poor and desperate human beings yearning to breathe free, you know, was an act of nullification of the Constitution's grant of international border maintenance and foreign policy to the federal government. The so-called southern border with the Rio Grande is not the Texas border. It is, in fact, the United States border. but Marge has a taste for secession. SecD! And while something like SecD is kind of funny, I remember that from years ago. We need to laugh less and act more. At one point in time in the Congress, the mere mention of secession would have resulted in swift and sure action. But it's 2023, and we don't even know if we can apply the self-executing rules of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to a man who ordered up a domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States and the Constitution itself. And we can't count on, I don't think we can count on the voters of Georgia's 13th district to finally stop letting her humiliate them. And just because it's salacious and it's something besides Trump, and because it's on our side, I'm seeing a lot of ads now, and they are primarily Republican ads, and they are attack ads, and they are filthy. The ones I'm seeing are, and they're coming out of Virginia, because Virginia is one of those states that has off-year elections, and things are gearing up in that state, and it's ugly. Well, these ads are, the ads being run against Clint Jenkins, who is a black man, who is pursuing a state Senate seat in Virginia, and has already been a member of their House of Delegates. And by the way, if you want to be a true West Virginian, we refer to over there as Least Virginia, and this is Best Virginia. That's what we've got. Not East Virginia, Least Virginia. Yeah, we can at least, you know, shoot the occasional spitball at them. But these are salacious ads against Clint Jenkins. He slapped his daughter around and came back and woke her up one night and said he'd kill her. Anything that is presented at that level of stark terms always makes my spidey sense tingle. And the fact that he is a black man being attacked by a bunch of Republicans, well, and it harkens back to the smear campaign that Walker, Texas Strangler, and his Republican handlers tried to run on Senator Raphael Warnock in Georgia. Didn't work then. Hope it doesn't work now. Enter Susanna Gibson. She is running for a seat in the Virginia House of Delegates. And it is described by the Washington Post
as a crucial seat in the House of Delegates. Okay, so over here in Best Virginia, which really isn't, but you have to give us an A for effort for sticking a finger in Least Virginia's eyes back in 1863 because we wanted to be a free state and they were a slave state. Started off well enough, I guess. Montani Semper Liberi, y'all, mountaineers, always free. Mountain people, always free. People called Romans, they go the ouse. Stop it. We don't have any crucial House of Delegates or Senate seats in our legislature anymore. We have 9 Democrats in the House of Delegates, and we have 2 members, because one's quitting, 2 members of the West Virginia State Senate. Between Joe Manchin and the current leadership of the Democratic Party, it is moribund. But there are crucial seats in a place like old Virginia. And the Washington Post is reporting this. Not that I give the Washington Post a pass for, but they do tend to be a little bit more persnickety about their fact-checking. And so Susanna Gibson is a nurse practitioner, which means she's gone through a shit ton of schooling to be a healthcare provider. And the Washington Post makes sure to put this in the second paragraph. And mother of 2 young children, running in a highly competitive suburban Richmond district. Well, the Washington Post has seen some videos on a social media platform called Chatterbait. Chatterbate. And it looks like there may be some dirty dealing at work because the videos in question were archived on something called Reekerbait in September 2022 after Susanna Gibson entered the race. The Washington Post cannot confirm when the videos were actually made. The Reekerbait videos are no longer available because a maggot operative got hold of the Post and told the Post about them. Hey, y'all want to see this? Well, they're off Reekerbait, but there's another site that's not password protected, and y'all can view it there. Naturally, they have to give Susanna Gibson's age. And I'm trying to figure out what this has to do with whether or not she would be an effective member of the House of Delegates. Apparently, Susanna Gibson is a woman who enjoys, I know, wait for it, sex. And you know what else? She likes to have sex with her husband. Yeah. Now, it's not like that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican we talked about last Wednesday who likes to have sex with little boys. This is a full-grown adult woman who likes to have sex with her husband and apparently was body positive enough that she and hubby got it on with a camera going and posted it to Chatterbait, where she asked for viewers watching them have sex to send in tips, money, for anything specific that they wanted to do, that wanted to see, because of course the viewers could send in requests and pay them money and say, oh, use your own imagination. And so the Washington Post article by Laura Vozella screams across the page, Virginia Dem House candidate performed sex online with husband for tips. Susanna Gibson is running in a competitive district with control of the House at stake. Now, I'm wondering if I'm a hypocrite here. Because, like I said, I don't see where this has anything to do with her ability to do a creditable job as an obviously educated, intelligent healthcare professional as a member of the House of Delegates. The Washington Post splattered her campaign poster, all done up in pretty gold and blue. Susanna Gibson's roots run deep in Virginia, where she was born and raised. As a wife, a mother of two, a seasoned nurse practitioner, and an accomplished public health specialist, her family has embraced Western Henrico as their home for more than a decade. Inspired by her genuine passion for ensuring the well-being of the community, Susanna Gibson is running for delegate to take on special interests and fight for you. One, deliver tax cuts for middle-class families, not giant corporate special interests. Okay. Two, lower health care costs and take on big pharma so you can get the medicine and care you need. Sounds good. No Republican's going to do that. Three, fight skyrocketing housing costs and protect against predatory developers whether you rent or own. God, it's about damn time somebody did that. It ain't going to be a Republican. And, you know, this is suburban Richmond. Which, you know, back in the early 1860s had some sense burned into it by Ulysses S. Grant. Never mind. But it's probably a pretty upscale suburban district. And you wonder if the videos are going, well, I never... And when somebody says that, you know, the obvious answer is, well, maybe you should. Breathlessly, Laura Vozella types, in at least two videos, she tells viewers she's raising money for a good cause. In multiple videos, Gibson interrupts sex acts to type into a bedside computer. Speaking directly into the screen, she urges viewers to provide tips which are paid through tokens purchased through the site. In at least two videos, she agrees to perform certain acts only in a private room, an arrangement that requires the viewer to pay more. I need, like, more tokens before I let him do that. She responds to a request before they perform a certain act. One token? No, more. Raising money for a good cause. And then the tips show up and she says, thank you, five times, and tells her husband, yeah, we can do that. She's a nurse practitioner, and of course the Post makes sure of pointing out that her husband is a lawyer. And at one point when she's soliciting tips, her husband chimes in and says, yeah, come on, guys. And getting it right, Susanna Gibson said, this is an illegal invasion of my privacy designed to humiliate me and my family. It won't intimidate me and it won't silence me. Go, girl. My political opponents and their Republican allies have proven they're willing to commit a sex crime to attack me and my family because there's no line they won't cross to silence women when they speak up. Yeah, you know what? And God forbid God forbid a woman enjoy sex. Because God knows. Never mind. Virginia, however, does have a revenge porn law. And it's a class one misdemeanor to maliciously distribute nude or sexual images of another person with intent to coerce, harass, or intimidate. Daniel P. Watkins said, "We are working closely with state and federal law enforcement." And the Post figures out a way to weasel out of its own rule about not disclosing the identities of victims of sex crimes, which at this point Susanna Gibson is, even though the Post buried that notion. Yep, maybe the headline should have read, "Democratic House candidate victim of sex crime." Democratic House delegate, the candidate, victim of Republican sex crime. No, but that's not salacious enough. Thank God she's not trans. They'd be calling her a groomer. The Post typically does not identify victims of alleged sex crimes to protect their privacy. In this case, Gibson originally live-streamed these sexual acts on a site that was not password-protected. The couple had more than 5,700 followers there. Many of the videos remained available to the public on other unrestricted sites as of Saturday. Watkins said Gibson was not aware of and had not authorized the posting of Chatterbait material on other sites. And then on the in the pages of the Post, they proceed to argue why it's okay for them to turn this into a salacious story instead of a story about a violation of a woman. Asked why Gibson had a reasonable expectation of privacy on Chatterbait, Watkins, the lawyer, pointed to a 2021 Virginia Court of Appeals ruling that found it was unlawful for a man to secretly record his girlfriend during a consensual sexual encounter, even if he did not show the video to others. In that case, Ronnie Lee Johnson versus Commonwealth of Virginia, the court found that consent to being seen is not the same as consent to being recorded, writing there was a stark distinction between an image existing only in someone's memory and a permanent file that may be shared or reviewed indefinitely. Now, you want to know who this is all being, on whose behalf this is all being done? A Republican retired home builder by the name of David Owen. Who is now scrambling, although he's probably as well. Probably as. Filthy as a cesspit.
Me and my team found out about this story today like everyone else. I'm sure this is a difficult time for Susanna and her family. And I'm remaining focused on my campaign.
He only issued that statement after the Post published their salacious little hit piece. Meanwhile, the maggot who went running to the Post said,
I don't got any connection to the Owen campaign, and I ain't connected to no campaigns going on in Virginia this year. And I won't stay anonymous on this because I don't want nothing to do with the controversy I'm about to start.
So then the Post reached out to Corey D. Silverstein, whom they describe as a prominent adult entertainment industry lawyer. Who told them There's absolutely no law that they're violating, none. In this case, you have two adults who are engaging in consensual sex, and they've decided they want to broadcast that, and they're doing so in exchange for tipping. There's absolutely nothing illegal about it. But then Silverstein, who has to make sure and get in a pitch for sex positivity, says, I think it's fantastic you have someone running who has an open sex life. It's actually very refreshing. Corey Silverstein's up in Michigan, but he has a national practice. The seat that Susanna Gibson is going for is empty. It's open. And meanwhile, if the maggots get hold of the Virginia legislature, that gang of misogynistic creeps will be able to enact a 15-week abortion ban. The other thing, and this is rather important because people keep talking about him this way, is that Glenn Youngkin, the maggot with the non-maggoty kind of appearance, who, I'm running on parental rights, who used to be a hedge fund dirtbag at like BlackRock or some one of those other filthy outfits. Well, people won't stay. He hasn't said anything. He's playing it coy, don't you understand? But he's being viewed by some as potential presidential timber. And if he loses this legislative election, every seat in the Virginia legislature, Senate and House alike, are up for grabs. And a few little seats will make all the difference in the world, and this does happen to be one of them. Well, then, once he gets going and makes sure and sticks it to women and finishes sticking it to marginalized communities, Youngkin has already said, I'll sign any bill to protect life. Well, if he loses, that presidential timber may fall in the forest and there won't make a sound whether there is or isn't anybody there to hear it, because then they'll run away from him. Virginia, at this point in time, is still a safe place for women to be pregnant, in case they have to do something to terminate that pregnancy. The Democrats hold the Senate in Virginia, 22-18. The maggots have the House at 49-46. Gibson had to spend a fortune, the Post notes, fighting for the nomination, beating one Bob Shippey for that nomination, another Democrat. And so she's got less cash on hand for the general by far than the building contractor, Owen. And she's Susanna Gibson's doing what she can to mitigate the damage. She said, this is just the kind of filthy politics Republicans play when they want to silence women who speak up. They're trying to silence me because they want to silence you, and I won't let that happen. Because that's not the same thing as Nitwit Nero saying, if they can come after me, they can come after you. That's not the same thing. This is real. Because if the Republicans can keep her out of the House and put a reliable maggot misogynistic vote in there instead of her,
then they will, in fact, silence every woman in the Commonwealth of Virginia. They will make it so that women must remain silent if they become pregnant and want to do anything but carry the pregnancy to term and have an absolutely perfect pregnancy with no problems, no preterm labor, no spontaneous abortions, no preeclampsia, remain silent. Susanna Gibson went on and said, my opponent and his allies know that the people of this district are on our side on the issue, so they're stooping to the worst gutter politics. There's too much at stake in this election, and I'll never stop fighting for our community. Dalton Bennett contributed to the Post report alongside Laura Vozella and whoever let this go to press this way should be ashamed of themselves. Virginia Dem House candidate, victim of Republican sex crime. That's the real headline. But instead we get Virginia Dem House candidate performed sex online with husband for tips. Shit's sickening. And maybe Virginia's the wrong place. Although it is probably the most enlightened of the former Confederate states. Largely because Northern Virginia is basically a suburb of Washington, D.C. And therefore there are more enlightened people there than, say, enlightened people in, I don't know, Mississippi. Or West Virginia. But it would be a shame to watch Virginia go down the toilet, too. Because in a state like West Virginia, Virginia being a viable option for women who need reproductive care is important. Okay, Randy, you said it. Randy Radar said, hell, the rest of us do it unknowingly in front of the telescreen. But no, Virginia may be the wrong place, but when do the sex lives of ordinary people stop being fodder for politics? Because the only reason the Republicans are making a noise about this, and the only reason they pulled this criminal act, is because they think there are enough knuckle walkers and mouth breathers and people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings in that district who will say, I can't believe she and her husband let people watch them. Muriel, remember that time on the bar? Well, I was drunk. Well, I was too, but we liked it, didn't we? Oh, really? I guess that's just... And the funny thing is, for as much noise as the Post made about this, the one thing they made abundantly clear is they don't even know when the damn things were made. She may have been 30, and they may not have... It may be... Hell, they may have conceived one of their kids. One of them, yeah, right? I'm trying to figure out where the harm is in this.
Because, frankly, I guarantee, and I guess this is no way to address the issue to the extent that it is an issue whatsoever. You know, the best defense is a good offense. Yeah, well, okay, they violated my privacy, they violated me, this is a sex crime. But you want to talk about sex crimes? Here. And pull out a list of every Republican who has ever been convicted of fucking a child. Or maybe show the picture of Donald Trump with his hand on his own daughter's ass. Or just play the clip of him saying,
you know, when you're a celebrity, you can just grab him by the pussy.
And then just say, are we done now? Here's the question. I want everybody to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. That motherfucker, that old white man over there, doesn't. I want to do something about housing and affordability of housing in this district, and that dude over there made his living building houses that 90% of the people in this district can't afford and never will be able to. And you know that dirty old 67-year-old Republican has seen these videos and probably liked them and is snickering up his sleeve even now. Because the more conservative they are, the kinkier they are. There's nothing wrong with kinky. It's not about the kink. It's about the hypocrisy. There's an old joke out there that says that kinky is tickling your partner with a feather. Perverted is using the whole chicken. To tickle your partner with the feather. Never mind. And see, if this came out about a Republican, it would not be a Republican woman having sex with her Republican husband. It would be a Republican husband having sex with his Republican wife's pet goat. Or it would be the Republican husband having sex with a 14-year-old little boy in a motel room in Oklahoma, like Ralph Shorty. Is he out of prison yet? On the other hand, this is kind of healthy. And God knows we need... Well, but then again, remember, this is all just America's long-running, pathetic, twisted affair with Calvinism. And just, no, it's not Wednesday. But here we are. You see things like this and you go, oh, no. Because I remember a lot from 20 years worth of this. And I remember a long time ago reading about how all the evangelicals, I mean, not all of them, but, you know, okay, George and Coarse Gold heard the same joke. I heard it this way. Erotic is using a feather. Kinky's using the whole chicken. Oh, by the way, about 10 minutes left in the program. This is one of those goose egg evenings, apparently. Steve in New York put a $7.90 challenge on the table that, in honor of his Uncle Ron's birthday, who would have been 79 today. Just symbolically, it's great not to have a goose egg during a live program. If you want to help out, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, please. Leave a comment. Tell your friends and neighbors. So, here we are. And like I said, years ago, I heard about this effort by, oh, I think it was one of those weirdos like John Starve Hagee to sort of force Jesus down out of the clouds. There was an entire infrastructure devoted to, and I know this is crazy, but this is just our, you know, we'll call this the kicker for the program. Well, hey, Ralphs, thank you for jumping in and saving us from the goose egg and matching Steve's challenge. So that gets us down to, I said it was 993.50, 992.70. Oh, it's somewhere around 975 and change. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. Really. Okay, we'll get back to the red heifer in a minute, but Theo has a comment about Susanna Gibson. Hey, Robin. Hey, Theo. You're so right. Were I to run for office in this climate, anything I've ever said, posted online about LGBTQIA plus rights or therapy for sexualized children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, would be seen as grist for the mill. I'm ready to donate to Susanna Gibson's campaign as soon as I've got some spare cash after I send some your way. Don't worry, Theo. Yeah, it would be great if Democratic women who were sex positive and would like to see an end of women being victimized for actually liking sex. Harlot! You know. Just absolutely swamped her in cash so that she can bury David Owen and work a little bit on Glenn Youngkin's ulcer. Girl can hope. You know, one other thing before we get back to the kicker. TJ just jumped in. Hey, TJ. And TJ took us down to 950. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Frank, for taking us down to 940. Thank you. TJ said, and I thought about this when we ran the clip of Nitwit Nero's 9/11 tribute.
The beautiful field of the prayers. Wait for baby. Wait for baby, you sons of bitches.
TJ said, if I remember correctly, after 9/11, when the buildings fell,
Trump said, look at me, I now have the tallest building in New York City.
Or in Lower Manhattan, something like that. Remember? Yeah, he did that. He bragged about that. Those were literally his first words. In the aftermath of the attack. That's who he is. Thanks, TJ. Okay, back to the millennialist or premillennialist or postmillennialist goofball. Whack it. Well, you're right. Brother D-Face says, wrong, going back to the greatest threats to America. Wrong, the greatest threat to the U.S. today is 6 feet two and 215 pounds. Yeah, in his bra. 6'2", 215. God. Okay, just to wrap things up with some crazy. The goofballs who believe in the end of days are fixated on all kinds of signs and wonders, miracles and wonders. These are the days of miracles and wonders. This is the long-distance call, Paul Simon sang. And so one of those miracles that has to happen before Jehovah kicks the boy off his stool and back down here to be tormented some more is they have to have a perfect red heifer, you know, to slaughter to make God happy so that they can consecrate the, I don't know, So, the first red heifer in 2,000 years, how did they document that? It has apparently happened. Story takes in a guy named Clyde Lott. He's one of those snake handling, floor rolling, Crisco anointing, tongue speaking, serpent juggling Pentecostal types. He's a gospel sharp. And he ran across Numbers 19 in the Old Testament in the Pentateuch. And it talks about a ritual involving a red heifer without spot. And so this created a fixation. And so in what, 1996, there was a red calf born in Israel. They named the calf Melody. The Israeli government had to put the calf under armed guard because you can't build the third temple without the red heifer. One columnist for Haaretz back then said the calf should be immediately slaughtered because it could bring about religious warfare, because, you know, the Muslims and the Jews over there will fight over anything. One rabbi said, yeah, she's a red heifer, but, well, no, it's not time to build the temple yet. And so, meanwhile, as the climate heats up, the planet burns, the planet drowns, people starve. Starve, said John Hagee. There are weirdos obsessed with a perfect red heifer without spot. What a world, what a world, what a world, what a world. Oh, and by the way, on the way out the door, the FDA has officially approved the new COVID booster. So, you know, what I say at the end of the program, get your booster. They're both made by, the boosters are both made by Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna. And they are tailored to the variants that are currently running about. Dr. Peter Marks, director of the FDA Center of Biologics Evaluation and Research, said, "Vaccination remains critical to public health and continued protection against serious consequences of COVID-19, including hospitalization and death. The public can be assured that these updated vaccines have met the agency's rigorous scientific standards for safety, effectiveness, and manufacturing quality. We very much encourage those who are eligible to consider getting vaccinated." So expect the usual braying and grunting and hooting and bleating and shrieking and screaming to begin anew. And I don't know, I expect in the next couple of days I'll probably begin seeing articles talking about how rotted FK is out there running away around. Don't get the Bill Gates vaccine. Especially if you're black. They should begin being available later this week as they go out across the country to pharmacies and And the FDA says kids age 5 and up can get one updated booster dose at least 2 months after the last COVID dose. They're approved for age 12 and older. Emergency authorized for kids between 6 months and 11 years. And I saw a story just the other day that pointed out the fact that apparently there is a correlation, you know, correlation is not causation, but there is apparently a correlation between IQ or, you know, let's call it measurable intelligence and vaccine willingness. The more intelligent a person is, the more likely they are to go out and get the damn vaccine. And researchers said it could be that people who are not as intelligent have a harder time processing the information, namely that they need to go and get vaccinated. Let's be the smart ones. Shall we? Well, that's helpful. The story I'm working from here comes from ABC News. And 72% said, yes, I plan on getting the updated COVID booster this year. Unscientific, though, that polling is. So that's the program. That's Morian Monday. And we had us some Morian. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks, y'all, for keeping this from being a goose egg. Thanks for the kind matching challenge, Steve in New York. Thank you so much. Happy birthday, Uncle Ron. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. thanks to our all-volunteer staff. I never did see if anybody popped into the chat room to moderate in my, well, moderate in my negligence. Nope, just me. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. He's why that website exists. Remember to like and subscribe to the podcast, please. Or join us live, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. All times in between in the great globe round right here at headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Get that booster. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots. By the way, I saw a tweet earlier, saying that people who are wearing masks in Texas are being catcalled and intimidated by the mouthwalkers and the knuckle breathers. Monkey up DeKlantis's phony baloney chief surgeon general is telling people not to get the vaccine. The booster. That's a hell of a flex in God's waiting room. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. If some hayseed chomping on some morning glory seeds comes your way and says, "Look here, I got a perfect red heifer," avoid him like the plague, because he is, and always. Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.